Welcome to the Sober by Design podcast, where we explore the many pathways to recovery and a better life through conversations with a wide array of guests. Whether you're sober curious, in recovery, or simply looking to improve your mental health and well-being, this podcast will have something for you. Each week, we sit down with inspiring guests from all walks of life who share their personal stories of struggle and triumph, offering valuable insights and practical advice on how to design a life worth living. From addiction and mental health to spirituality and creativity, we cover a wide range of topics that are relevant to anyone seeking to live a more fulfilling and authentic life. So join us on this journey of discovery, growth, and transformation, and start designing a new life. All right, everybody, welcome to the Sober by Design podcast. We are back with a guest today, and that is super exciting for me and you because you don't just have to listen to my thoughts stream endlessly. Tonight, we have Heidi Lang. Heidi is from Hawaii and a person in long-term recovery. Welcome to the podcast, Heidi.
Thank you, Corey. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
I'm stoked to be.
Of course. It's really nice to have somebody from Hawaii. I think you are my first guest from Hawaii.
Well, aloha. Wonderful.
Aloha. As we always like to start out these episodes, if you could just kind of go back and tell the listeners a little bit about how you grew up and where you grew up. I really do think it's kind of the basis for some of our recovery journeys. And it's always a great place to start out. So if you can just give us that background.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Northern California, a small town there called Winters, California, in Northern. And I came from a family, looking at it from the outside or even now, not anything that you would say like a bad childhood. I always had a feeling being different. And always wanting to kind of find whatever that was that where I would feel like I was a part of. And I say that because I didn't love, or I have two brothers that I absolutely adore, and a mother and a father that I love. And all four of them treated me just well. But we were, you know, maybe on the poor side. And for that, I always felt less than. And just an idea of not being good enough, and then trying to manipulate any situation I could that would make me feel better about that. So even before I first picked up a drink or a drug, I was kind of in a fantasy daydream, which could sound like, wow, of course kids love to play fantasy and daydream, but it really was a form of escape for me. I'd go outside and just pretend I was someone else. I got to a point where I had a friend over visiting from school. We were in my room, in my house, a one-story house. And she was telling me about her house and how beautiful and big it was. And we're sitting in my room and tell her, oh, yeah, me too. Big two-story house. And I'm like, in my house, I'm telling this lie to make myself look and feel better with no, you know, just no sense of no bullshit me. It completely, am I, can I cuss on here?
Yeah, cuss away.
Curse too much, but bullshit's a good one. And I was full of a lot of it from a young age. Which I think is very something I find not unique about myself being in. So feeling less than, feeling apart then, and then trying to overcompensate for that with lies and manipulation. So even before I picked up a drink, there was that. And I spent my childhood, I had an older brother that's 4 years older than me, and I got to see him dabble in things, and I got to see him kicked off the basketball team. I got to see him get in trouble at school with teachers and trouble with you know, our parents. So I would look at what he was doing and his using and to myself, that's never going to be me. You know, I didn't want to get in trouble. And I liked being a people pleaser. I wanted to please my family and my parents. Same thing. I grew up my dad drink off early childhood. I had never seen a really drunk person. And I saw my dad. I was in my room and I had a bathroom in my room and completely naked, barfing and cursing. And I'm looking at this and I know it's alcohol related. I knew it was from the beer he had drank at the neighborhood party before. And so I'm thinking to myself, gosh, that's never going to be me. You know, that's not me. And, yeah, time went by and I'd say I tried to get drunk a couple of times before I actually did. You know, it'd be like sleepovers with girls and we'd sneak into the liquor cabinet and take a couple sips of stuff. Never any of that. Not the first couple times I drank. And then I did. I remember it clear as day. My first drink is actually the same drink as my last drink. So my first drink that got me drunk, that was, you know, lukewarm vodka out of a plastic handle. Mm-hmm. And that was, I was ninth grade. I would have been 13 or 14 years old. I believe I was 13. And it was a real drink, right? Just vodka, no chaser, no mixer. And that warm sensation going down, spreading through your chest. Within minutes, it was on. And it was just a bunch of us gals, like, just drunk for the, it was like an afternoon, evening thing. I never got. The next day I woke up, no headache, nothing weird. I went to school the next day and everyone was like talking about how fun it was. So in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, the guys in my family can't drink. That's what it is. My brother and dad can't handle their shit. Like, this is, and I hear this so much, people speak. It's like, I've arrived, mm-hmm. You know, finally, there's this thing. And I wouldn't say, if you looked at me from the outside, you wouldn't say I drank alcoholically. I drank like of high school did, weekend warrior, you know, or New Year's Eve, Halloween. But when I drank to get drunk. And looking back on it now, there was behaviors that were alcoholic. And I'll explain one of those to you. I remember being with my high school sweetheart, this, you know, guy I was in love with at the time, and it was New Year's Eve. The ball was going to drop, and we're at this party where there's a keg. And he, before the ball drops, he asked me, he's like, do you want to get out of here and go back, you know, at my place? There's not a bunch of people. We can watch the ball drop and have a romantic by ourselves. And immediately, my first thought in my head was, I'm not leaving this cake. Mm-hmm. Not. And when I look back at now, I'm like, that's an alcoholic. Like any other like high school girl would be like, wow, a romantic night. Like, what a sweet gesture. Sure, let's head off. No. And I remember we did leave, you know, but I couldn't stop thinking about that keg and the beer I was missing out on. And that was really young. That was like 16, 17 years old. So I was drinking alcoholically from the get-go, even if I wasn't, you know, up in hospitals or whatever. And I don't know if I was able to make this connection in my early sobriety, but since I have a couple years now, my sobriety date is April 4th, 2017.
Okay.
I like to hear that before. That's when I started recovering. You know, and it just progressed. It went from weekend warrior stuff to, I went to school in Los Angeles, and I remember keeping, again, the vodka always. I drank everything. Mm-hmm. I drank whatever. But for some reason, vodka plays quite a role in my story. This lukewarm vodka out of a plastic handle, you know. I remember sitting in my room and drinking alone. I was a senior in college and being like, thinking to myself, like, is this weird? Is this a problem? But I hung out with so many alcoholics as well. Like, we were all like, and this was again in like the early 2000s, the roaring 2000s. Like, everyone was getting fucked up. Like, recovery wasn't on. If you were an alcoholic, you were living under a bridge, drinking out of a paper bag. So I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but I will tell you what, I did feel shame about it. It wasn't something I was telling people. Hmm. So in my early 20s, I started hiding my drinking and realizing I can drink wherever I want. Like, I can drive and in a coffee cup, have my vodka and juice and drive on the 210. No problem. Like, who's going to stop me? Not the police. No, I've never had a DUI, and I drove drunk for a good 10 years and pulled over multiple times. And, you know, my privilege of being a cute white girl, I just never got sent to jail. I never even had a sobriety test. It was every time I get pulled over. One time I had open bottles next to me clanking around, beer bottles. The officer is like, have you been drinking? And like points to the bottles, and I told him it was my recycling, and he let me go. So I'm drinking all through my 20s. I'm driving, I'm drinking, and I remember I had a class at 7 p.m. and I'm like, wait, again, why didn't I think of this before? I can be drinking in this class. I can listen to the lecture. I got good grades. I graduated on the Dean's List, Honor Society. I was drunk through a lot of my classes and still able to somehow do well in school. Again, it's progression. So this was early 20s at this point. Then I moved out from California. I finally moved out of California because I mean, there were a couple reasons, but the major reason was I was in an abusive relationship, and the relationship got physical. And I think I felt, you know, it was the beginning of my geographics. It was like, hey, and by geographics, I mean, I'm going to geographically change where I'm at, hoping for a different feeling, a different answer. And so that's what I did. I moved from, when I was 22 years old, I moved from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and that was a complete different world. I felt I just was very naive and scared of a lot of things, and I was working in a corporate world where, here we are again, wait, they promote drinking. Like, when we get off work, they want you to go to the house, and I don't have to pay for it. Like, these guys, like, these companies are just paying for me to sit around and think and talk story. And so it progressed in Washington, D.C., and that would be the first place where I started to lose jobs, relationships. So here it starts. Yeah, I had a corporate job there, and I lied to... This behavior of lying and manipulating is just, the drinking's going up and the manipulation and lying's going up. They go hand in hand because you're squirrely. Here in Hawaii, we talk about being squirrely. Like, it's just all, there's always some ulterior motive. Like, it was never just like, I'm just living my life, trying to be happy and do my stuff. Yes, that, but also I have this huge secret and this monster inside of me that needs to be fed, and nothing and no one is getting in the way of that. I'll fix it. I'll arrange things around me so that I can do what I need to do. Because that's all it was about.
I want to stop you for just a second. So, really good background. Totally get it, right? Like, the idea of, you know, the fantasy world, and that idea of like, hey, I'm just going to manipulate the world around me from a young age is kind of like makes sense, right? Like it's a trait that you had early. You watched your brother and your father and you thought, oh, this will not be me. Like all of these things are pretty, I don't want to say typical, but things that you hear, you know, if you're in this world long enough, you hear similar kind of backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I 100% get the college story, you know, the ability to just kind of drink whenever, and it had no impact really. Well, it might have, but for you, like you were able to get the grades, so you weren't seeing as detrimental. You never had a consequence, right? Like cop pulls you over. I have the same story. Like, you know, again, made it through college, never had the DUI, never really lost anything. So I get that story. And some of it is just straight luck. Some of it's straight privilege. For me, it was a combination thereof. And I feel lucky for that. So you went to college for something specific, I'm guessing.
Yes, I did. And I graduated with a communications major.
Okay. So when you go to DC, what you're in like that communication corporate world, right?
I was working for a military health. Everyone does the same stuff out there. They're all contract jobs. I was working doing admin work. I was like the front desk girl at this military health solutions, blah, blah, blah. Everyone thought they were a big deal. Mm-hmm. I kind of laughed at them all. What did I hear once? If you're not good looking enough to live in LA or smart enough to live in New York, you move to DC.
It's a different city.
So I had this arrogant attitude and, but that being said, I did have a job that like paid me my first ever salary and I had bills to pay. And I wanted to go on a trip with my then boyfriend, and rather than just like being an adult and asking my supervisor, hey, can I take this time off? I lied and I made up the stupidest lie. This is so embarrassing saying this stuff, but yeah, I lied. I said, oh no, my dad had a heart attack. I need to go back to the West Coast. And I got caught because someone I knew told my boss, you know, like, no, she's on a vacation. And so when I came back, I got fired. And that was like the beginning of like that feeling of demoralization, like where you're just like, I felt so shitty. And I started lying to myself, right? Instead of looking at what happened in that situation and being like, I lied, here's the consequence. I was like, that's not fair. That's not fair. You know, she shouldn't have told on me. If she was my friend, why would she? It's like, I started pointing fingers, right? So no blame on myself, no room for any self-awareness. The self-awareness is just, the alcoholism is going up. The self-awareness is just going down. And with that, you know, then I got a job at a restaurant there. And the restaurant industry has sprinkled through my life, continues till today. Although I have a healthy relationship with it now. As addicts, that's the spot to be, man. Everyone is drinking. Everyone's using drugs. I was bartending at an Italian place there in Eastern Market. And I remember my boss into the office. We were good. You know, we got along. He pulls me into the office and he's like, hey, you know, have you been drinking on your shifts? And I'm like, no. And at the end of the night, I couldn't fucking count my money. Like, you got to do your closeout. It was like, I was sloshed. And he's like, well, I've seen the cameras, like you are. Although, like, you know, like to have a couple drinks around here, like you're getting too drunk so that you can't even do your job. And I agreed with that because, yeah, I'd black out by the end of my shift. I had no idea. You know, it wasn't good for business. It wasn't good for me. I was looking at it that way. I wasn't like, oh, shame on me, I'm drunk at work. I was like, you're right. I could make more money, get better tips if I will stay sober. So, you know, it, like, here comes the empty promises of like, gotcha, I'll stop drinking at work. It didn't happen. Like a week or two later, again, calls me in. And this time he says, Heidi, you're stealing. And I'm like, stealing? I'm not a stealer. What do you mean I'm stealing? He's like, you're drinking my liquor that I buy for this restaurant to sell to patrons, and you're drinking it. And I was like, oh, I guess I didn't look at it that way. You know, and I was fired. So there's the second job I'm fired from again. And you know what? You have to answer to people like your fam. The thing about me that I'm so blessed about, but during the time I couldn't see it, I have a lot of people in my truly care and love about. I was never someone who people are attracted to me and they love me. And I just today it's a gift. When you're an addict trying to do your thing, fuck you. Mind your business. You know, mind your business. Like, I could never understand why people wouldn't just leave me alone. But at the same time, also being like, I'm so lonely.
Yeah.
So after, you know, then I'd realize, look, DC's fucked. It's DC. It's DC. It's these jobs. I lost that boyfriend. I decided, okay, I'm going to move back to California. I won't go through a lot of this, but I was all over California, Oregon, and Washington State, just trying to move where I would be happy. And sure, you've heard this before, but everywhere you go, you keep running yourself. And that's exactly what was happening. Same thing. I'll keep it short. It was like this. It was like, I would go somewhere, move somewhere. I'd get a job. The job, people would hire me, likable, personable. Okay, let's do it. And not just the restaurant industries. I've done a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, so, and then I'd get a boyfriend. Cool, get a boyfriend. And then I would lose the job. And then I would lose the boyfriend. And I'd lose boyfriends because I was like lying and cheating on them. And like, these were all my faults. Like, it just didn't work out, you know? So it was this same cycle. That was my cycle. The first time I went into a hospital for alcohol, I would go for alcohol poisoning. What would happen to me? I've had my pumped and been on life support more times. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you how many times. It started in California a couple times, and then finally my mom had moved to Hawaii years prior, and I was like, okay, this is really what's gonna help. I'm gonna move so far across the ocean, it's really gonna fix it. And plus I'll be by my mom. So yeah, I moved to Oahu. I moved in with her, and it was, you know, surprise, surprise, the same thing. Like, I got a job, I had a boyfriend, job. The hospital stays started getting real bad and really scary. You know, I've had a seizure where I was there without alcohol, sometimes on my own accord, because my mom and other people in my life were like pleading with me to stop drinking. No one at this point had really suggested a program for me, I use Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. No one had suggested that yet. So it was like, I did want to stop drinking. Like, I wasn't like, happy with what I was doing. I was so scared of the idea of what life would be like without this vodka that was my best friend. Alcohol was always there for me. Like, from the time I had, you know, I told you from when I was in high school, I was choosing it over love. I was choosing it over anything and everyone. There wasn't, I have goosebumps right now talking about this, because now I have a kind of a feeling of neutrality of alcohol. Today, I bartend, I serve alcohol, I serve drinks, I do other things too, but it's not that way anymore. At the time, it was very much on my mind, that thing, like the first thing you think about when you wake up and the last thing you think about when you go to bed, as if it was like, you know, I like to relate it almost to like a romance, really. So I had no idea how I was gonna live without it. Try to stop drinking, or maybe I just didn't have the money for it, or I couldn't because My poor mother, you know, she watched me go through this for years in Hawaii before I got over. And the hospital, like I said, the hospital stays. I would come to in the hospital and either have a tube down the throat. There were several times where I was on life support. And then my mom would be next to the bed and my eyes would open up. And I couldn't remember the night before. Like, I wouldn't remember what happened, but I knew what happened. Like, oh, I drank too much and here I am. And I remember my mom giving me a $20 bill. This is before Uber and Lyft. She gives me a $20 bill and she's like, here, take a taxi home. We'll see you at home when we discharge you. And I took that $20 bill and I bought, you know, a $15 fifth, bought my fifth and used the change, the dollar to get on the bus to go to, because that's what was important. Leaving the hospital, stomach pumped, charcoal on me still, going in to get my bottle. Like, that's the insanity of this disease. I don't know. That's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you were saying like, vodka was the only thing there for you. But as I was listening to your story, you were like, there were all these people that were supporting me. I just didn't want to hear them, right? So like your head is telling you like the only thing there is alcohol. But in reality, there was like family and friends and all of these good people that were behind there. You just, part of me probably thinks it's like a little bit of a shame thing, right? Like, I kind of feel gross and those people don't need to see that side of it. And then there's also like, your brain is playing tricks on you at that point. Like we've all been in that moment. Well, not all of us. Anybody who's like been in active addiction and now recovered, like you can see it, but you can't see it. It's hard to explain it. It's a
Biggest
weird
person
thing.
I was lying to was myself.
Yeah.
Like, the big, like, I was lying to everyone around me, but truly myself. And that's a beautiful point. Thank you for saying that, because yeah, I truly felt like that. I felt they're all like, I just wanted everyone to leave me alone. But I felt so alone. But I had this, you know, the vodka. And it was everything. I drank everything. It wasn't, but for some, like I said, the vodka just stayed out. And then in 2000, I would say, you know, I hit what some call a bottom. I think I had like several bottoms, but this was. I found myself yet again dumped. Okay, so this one was like, because by this one I mean the guys, they'd like not, they'd be like, oh, she just likes to drink and have fun. And then after a bit they're like, oh, this is a problem. Hey, I don't want to, if you're going to continue to drink like this, I'm not going to be with you anymore. And I'm like, yeah, no problem, I'll stop. The next day he comes back, I'm passed out. This was Christmas Day in 2016. No recollection of it. Like, the whole day I was passed out and drunk. So I woke up. I came to on the 26th. My partner had left me. I had missed Christmas. Like, you know, you look at the day, you're like, how do you? Because even if you don't celebrate Christmas, you don't have a lot going on. Like, you still are like, ah, Christmas. All right, Merry Christmas. No, I the whole day it's. That day in that year is completely gone. And just the best idea that I had in that moment was just to end. And I just remember it clearly. I was laying on a bed. I was in my studio. My kitchen was just within eyes distance. I walked over, picked up a knife from the kitchen, and it was like a brand new, I just moved in there, so it was a brand new kitchen knife. And I sat on my bed, and I'm left-handed, so I had it in my left hand, and I cut my wrist once, and I was like, fuck, I have to do this the right way. Because at first it's like, and then I went for that vodka and I cut my arm good. And I don't have too much memory of after that. I do remember calling, I don't remember calling her, but I called my mom and she knew right away. I guess what I said was I fucked up. And she came over and an ambulance came and they took me to Queens Hospital in Honolulu, where they put me in a ward and stitched up my wrists And the next morning I woke up and I couldn't move it. Like I couldn't move my hand at all. And I had no feeling in it. And it turns out that, you know, they just didn't stitch it up. I had cut through my tendons and nerves and I had no use of my right hand. So they were going to have to repair it and go in surgery, but they couldn't schedule it for like 5 or 7 days. It kept getting pushed back. So I was just chilling in the mental ward with no use of a hand and with nothing, like nothing. Like at this point, I had no job. I had no relationship. And I think that was the first time I prayed. That was the first time I talked to, you know, I like to say my higher power. Some people might say God. It's whatever that out there besides yourself. And I kind of asked for help, I would say. And I didn't feel any sense of relief or anything good, but it was the first time I'd asked. And I remember before my surgery, sitting down with a therapist and I was finally diagnosed. I was diagnosed as an alcoholic. And I was diagnosed as bipolar. Mm-hmm. And so they put me on a bunch of medication for bipolar. And the alcoholism, it was like, well, stop drinking. Oh, okay. So that was 2016. My sobriety day is until April 2017. There were 4 months of me finding my way. And it consisted of going to, you know, I'd go to a lot of AA meetings and I would sit in the room and I would listen to what these other sober people had to say. And I really thought it was pretty nice what they had to say, but like it wasn't for me. Like I was still better at it. Mm-hmm. Like what, like this idea of, it's weird when you're in your addiction, you have very, very low self-esteem because you have nothing to, you don't do esteemable acts. What do I have to have self-esteem about? Like, no, it's just not like I'm lying to everyone, thieving. It's just, but this very high sense of self still. That is like when I was younger, right? When I was saying I'm better than my family, like they're poor. And I know I deserve better. So that was, I, you know what, when I talk about my past, that 4 months was a real, anyone who's like kind of deciding like, is this for me? Is recovery for me? I'm not sure. Just, I don't know. Like, let go of yourself. Let go of it and give it a shot. I had to go to rehab. I could not stop drinking. By this point, I really did want to stop, and I couldn't. I would go to meetings, and I couldn't because I wasn't doing what I was told to do. Like, there's that, the idea of letting go of your old beliefs and ideas and getting new ones. That was something I know. I was 29 years old. The only thing I knew was what Heidi knew for 29 years. Years and I didn't really want to live one. So I went to rehab.
The thing, you know, the other thing in there is like you were saying, like that thing about like when you're a kid and you're thinking you're better than, and you know, you couldn't relate to those people and you have no self-esteem, but yet this really kind of high view of yourself. It's, we all think that we're super unique. And I think for me, what happened was like, well, for lucky, the last time I went to AA, like the last first time I went to AA, it stuck, right? Like there was a couple other times I went, I'm like, this is nonsense and I don't need to be here. These people don't know what they're talking about. But the last time I was able to kind of sit in the room and go like, one, I have a real bad problem. Two, I need help. And three, these people are all just like me. But they're mm-hmm. better now, right? Like, yeah. And something happened, right? Like, I could realize that I'm not that special. Because, like, yeah. For so long, I thought I was special. Like, I was a special person. All my problems were super special. No one ever had it as hard as me. Like, all these things were so unique to Corey. And then you go in there and you're like, oh, wow, a lot of this sounds just like me, right? If you can just, like, let yourself hear it.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. So it takes that moment in those rooms to just kind of let go of yourself for a little bit. And it's really, really hard, though. It is one of the harder things to do, I think, in general.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I couldn't get it till I went into rehab. And I did have that moment in rehab where I went to Hinamauka in Kaneohe. And that was life-changing for me. Not because it was a fancy, beautiful place. Not at all. It was the kind of rehab where people straight from jail, right when they're able to get out of jail, if they go to rehab. So it was like mostly men. I want to say it was like 50 of us, probably, you know, the like a good 40 of them just being men, the rest women. A lot not self-admit. I was a self-admit client, so they had to be there because of court things. And I remember the first night being in there, standing in the cafeteria and looking around. And you mentioned it just a second ago. I was like, I'm just like these people. Literally, I'm standing in the room with these people in the same program. I am this. Something changed. Something. It was like I had the same mentality I had put. Like, say when I was in college, I did well in college, right? Because I tried. I was like, okay, I'm going to try it out. Or I'm going to dancing. I'm going to try it out. I, for the first time, was like, okay, I'm going to do the things they say, the suggestions. And so that's when that surrender came in of just giving up, you know, my old ideas and beliefs. And it didn't come easily or fast. I was guided so much. When I left, I was in rehab for 30 days. When I left, they asked me, you know, where are you going to go after this? And I said, well, just right back to Waikiki, like back to just where I was, work at the same job. And my counselor was like, I suggest you live in a clean and sober house. And in my head, I'm like, I am 29 years old. I'm not going to house with all these other people and have a curfew and be tested. That's Heidi's thinking. That was my thought. And then there was the voice of like God, higher power, the thing that's not me, that was like, okay, all right, I'll do it. I started trying things I had never tried before and started saying yes when I just badly wanted to say no. And it was little things like, you know, I started going so I was in that clean and sober house. Thank God for the clean and sober house because I had to go to meetings regularly. I did what they said. I got a home group. I got a sponsor. I worked steps with those sponsors. I got in service. And those are things I did 7 years ago. And those are things that I still do today. And I think that's what truly has kept me sober, because this disease, it's cunning and baffling. And at any moment, you know, I never say, oh, I'm never gonna drink again. I don't say that. I don't say, I just have, just for today, you know, seriously, I don't, cause I see too many. That's the other thing. When you go to a lot of meetings, you see a lot of people that leave and come back, and with long-term sobriety too, they'll have a long time. So I don't for one second think that I'm better or different or unique anymore. Not anymore. I know I am a whole, I'm a part of this. I'm an alcoholic. What do alcoholics do? We drink. The only reason I don't drink is the grace of God. Literally, it's insane to me to this day that I don't drink, because I was the kind of alcoholic, like, you could keep, I remember the first thing I would think when I would get in someone's place, so weird. First thing I would think, I'd be like, where's their liquor? Like, I would notice too. And even if I wasn't going to take any of it, which most of the time I would, like, weird, like, yeah, like, you leave me alone in that room, I'm taking off the bottle, I'm taking a nip. It was like, because getting away with things also so elusively, it feels so good. It's like, it's like the sneaky, it's part of the alcoholism in the addiction. It's not just about, you know, feeling and the high I would get from the actual substance. It was the getting away with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with, like, you hear that from a lot of drug people who use drugs, right? Like people who are maybe, you know, a heroin addict, like part of it is the getting of the heroin mm-hmm. is like yeah. just as exciting as the drug, if not more so.
Isn't that something? I'm really realizing that, because, and the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, okay, you know, today I've been sober, but I'm still an alcoholic. So I still have that sense of, you know, I can have awful low self-esteem. Like, you wouldn't think it, but I can think the shittiest things about myself. And it's like, okay, what are those quick fixes that'll make me feel better? Yeah, getting away with shit is one of them. It makes you feel smarter. It makes you feel like you're one up in or something. I haven't completely wrapped my mind around it.
Just a treat too, right? Like for me, it's like ice cream, right? Like it's so stupid, but like, yeah, I'll get ice cream. I feel bad. Ice cream will help. And it's like, I know what I'm doing. It's just not as bad as the other thing. Like when I got sober, I ate the heck out of candy.
Ben and Jerry's was just my savior.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I did like Swedish fish. Like I would eat pounds of Swedish fish. Like it was crazy how much sugar I ate. And I'll recommend that to people that I work with now. Like, listen, it's harm reduction. Like Swedish fish, you're not gonna like blow your life up eating Swedish fish for 6 months. Like you could do that.
In my purse all the time.
Yeah,
always. And I think it recommends that it's either in the Big Book or the 12 and 12. They talk about keeping chocolate next to your bed.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the middle of the night, if you get a craving, I'm like, that's what's up. Like it was the same 100 years ago as it is today. We don't fucking change. Yeah. It's like the same things. So what my life is like today and what it's been like since I've been sober, truly it's been, they call it recovery for a reason. You're recovering yourself at some age, and could have been, you know, I started drinking, but in general that wonderment of like what I wanted to do and what I enjoyed, what my dreams were, was just lost because it was replaced with the drug, with the alcohol, right? So I find myself, like I said, I just got out of school. Since you've talked to me, I was teaching Aquafit. And when I was younger, I was on swim team. I was always in a bathing suit and at the pool. And today, I'm always in a bathing suit and I'm wet and I'm in the sun. I also teach yoga. Yoga is something I can't even describe in words what it means to me, but I've only found it because of my recovery. And it was brought into my rehab. Someone came in and taught a yoga class. And of course I had done yoga before a little bit and I knew what it was, but I remember having 30 days of sobriety and they told me, you gotta have your routine in the morning. Like say your prayer, do, like, everyone has their own thing they do. And I remember being like, I'm going to start doing 10 minutes of yoga. So that was 7 years ago. I started doing a YouTube video on yoga. Today, I have a yoga business. I teach all over the Hawaii Islands. I'm thinking about, wow, I truly have gotten my life back and more than, you know, gotten into my body, gotten to know my body. I get to change other people's lives. And this was something I didn't have time for that when I was, I didn't have time or want to know anything about myself or my body, or much less help someone else. The selfishness and self-centeredness that comes along with this disease is maybe one of the most ugliest traits of it. You know, even if I was sober, like say like, well, drunk today, no, but thinking of myself and not the fuck about you.
Right.
You know, my first thought when I would wake up would be like, it still is actually, I'll be with you. First thought sometimes I wake up are kind of, well, what do Heidi need? What can Heidi do today? And I have to, within minutes of waking up, I wake up, I take a sip of water, I go pee, I sit down and I meditate. And I'm just quiet. Because I have to turn this voice off in my head, the fear that thinks, the fear and the lie that, one, I'm not good enough, I don't have enough, something I have is going to get stolen. It's this, what do I have to do today? I have to take that out of my head and replace it with another will, a will that I know is not in me. It's, I have to ask it from somewhere else. It being like, hey, come into my life and maybe I can help others today, which like, it just wasn't. It wasn't a thought process in my head before. If you asked me back in the day when I was drinking, I am selfless. The things I do for people. No, I was a people pleaser.
Yeah.
To feed my ego. The people pleasing that goes along with being an addict is that's also a common trait I see a lot. And it has nothing to do with truly wanting to help other people. It is the sense of feeling like control and you're the reason why someone else is doing well.
Yeah, it's like a weird codependent thing. And, you know, you were saying, you know, you're when you're in, you know, active addiction, you're selfish. You're also hanging out with people who are, well, I was at least hanging out with people who were the same way. So it's like, it kind of feeds on itself and is all very weird. And you're not hanging out with people who do good things for good reasons, right? Like, so you're not even seeing like model behavior. And that is one of the big things that you start to see at places like AA or NA or any of these groups, or even when you just go out with like quote unquote normal people, right? Like people who maybe still drink, but are not addict, you know, not exhibiting that addict behavior. They're like, they can just do nice things because they're just nice, which is crazy.
But no alternative motive. Interesting.
Yeah.
I grasp that concept.
I used to teach swim lessons when I was in high school. I was on swim team as well. So I get the idea of being in the water all the time. I actually don't quite love swimming as much as I used to. Because I spend so much time in the pool, but I'm thinking if I lived in Hawaii, it would be a little bit different.
Sure.
And so you do yoga, Aquafit. You said you were still working restaurants.
Yep, I work for an events company here. It's called Events International, and we do everything from like big concerts to small weddings. And I work on the production end of that. So I'll like help the party get set up, go. And often have, you know, bartended those. And in my 7 years of sobriety, I've done a lot of bartending around Oregon, Denver. I was bartending and serving at the Denver airport prior to this. And I think it's truly been a gift, really. First of all, people, I'm not shy about being sober or not drinking alcohol, and I think that I'm able to, I don't know, it's just a nice, it's nice I think for other people to see, like, oh, you could serve alcohol and not have to drink it. Not only that, you're gonna prefer me being your bartender, not drunk, because I'll give you your proper change back and, you know, not snap at you. Truly, if I don't know, if recovery has, like I stated before, I've recovered my sense of self and who I am, and I'm still building that and learning it. The spiritual aspect, because for me, I could not, you know, I'm not a religious person. I grew up in churches a little bit, but so turned off by them. So for me, when I say, when I talk about my spirituality, it has nothing to do with religion. It's this sense of, it really is, you know, kind of like a magic thing. You got to ask something that's not there for help. And it seems silly. But what was more silly was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which was relying on myself or other people, like wanting like a man to come into my life or, you know, some system was going to save me. It had to be me getting out of my own way, because I was always my biggest enemy. And today I can be an asset to myself, fill myself up with spirit. Today I go to, I have a home group. It's an online meeting. It's a Zoom meeting called Defective Characters every morning, Hawaii time at 7 a.m. I'm listening to that first thing, 7 a.m. I've always been that alcoholic that has to get a message in the morning, because I said I'm squirrely. I read the daily. I get a little, get some nuggets in my head. And it's a time to connect with other other addicts. And then I go to in-person meetings. I go to at least a week, sometimes more. So I go to the online every day, at least 3 meetings a week. I have a sponsor. I've continued to work the steps. I'm currently on step 9. Look, the steps are the most beautiful blueprint for life. I wish every single person on the planet could work the steps. It doesn't matter if you have an addiction to a substance. If it's not a substance that's illegal, or alcohol, it's sex or love or food, video games, gambling. I don't know. It goes on, because I have more than just one addiction. I'll tell you that. It's a lot of things. In the 12 steps, it works for all of it.
Yeah. I always say it's just a great way to live. Like, if you could, you know, put those 12 steps into your life, you're going to be a better person. You know, yeah. Even if you think you don't have a problem with something, just going through that is a good way to just kind of enrich your life just a little bit, right? So I don't go to AA anymore. I started out there. I do not, you know, go to the program anymore, but I still live by, you know, most of that, you know, framework.
Once you've done it, yeah. Once you know the 12, once you know your character defects and you really see why they happen, it's like, oh, okay. Like I said, I haven't picked up a bottle. I haven't picked up a drink in over 7 years, but I'm telling you, it's a date. After you and I get off of this call, we'll be on a call with my sponsor. We'll be going over my 9th step amends letters. Yeah. I still have things I need to say sorry for and make amends about, and I can do that today with grace. Mm-hmm. And any, you know, I don't look at my past today as something that I'm ashamed of. It's something that I can use to help other people. It's something that I can use to get to know myself better, which is something I never thought would be possible. In the 9th step promises, it talks about you will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. And I think that was one of the promises I read early on, where I was like, there's some shit that's happened to me that I'm not telling no one about. And if I could erase it 100%, I would. And I can sit here, Corey, and tell you today that that's not the case. The worst things, like awful shit, like we're talking like rapes and, you know, like near-death experiences. And I'm saying, nope, I would not change a single thing about my life up until this very minute speaking to you, because I truly, I just love life today. This from a girl who didn't want to wake up, who didn't want to live, who, like, you know, takes a knife and like cuts herself. No, I go to, like, I can't right now. 1:55 p.m. I guarantee when I go to bed tonight, I'm going to be stoked, because then I get to wake up in the morning and do another day. Yeah. Like, I can't even believe that's my thought process. Like, I think, you know, and even if you don't think you have a problem with drugs or alcohol, you might have a problem with life. And if you don't want to live your life, like, you dread waking up in the morning, it's something to look at, because it truly is. It's a gift that we have here on this planet, this time, and I plan for the rest of my days to live each day like it is a gift.
Yeah, and they are, right? I mean, I think, you know, depending on what your experiences are, and you've had a bunch, and, you know, challenging things in your life, and, you know, some pretty big events that you just laid out. So, you know, now that you are on a different course, it's all, you know, I always tell my kids and people I work with that, that time is the one thing I can't make more of, right? So like there is a finite amount of it, so I try to spend it really wisely now. Because like there's only so much left here, and I'm not like getting younger and things aren't getting easier, so I try to make the best of every day if I can. And that doesn't mean that like I'm not gonna have crappy days. I do, and we all do, right? It's like, how do I recover from those crappy days or those crappy moments, right? That's all it is, you know.
And now I can.
And you can, right?
There's nothing a drug or a drink would do to make anything better.
Never.
Nothing.
Never.
There's nothing. It just, the worst things, and I have, there's, in 7 years, there's been shit that's happened to me, you know, like, you know, stuff that I could have drank over, and just, you just don't.
Yeah, same. Don't. Same.
Love that I have that choice today, because there was a time when I legit didn't have a choice. It was just, that's what I was going to do. I was going to pick up.
Yeah. So. And in those really bad moments, I can say, like, I've had some really, really bad moments in the 12 or so years. There was never a thought of like, oh, a drink now would make this so much easier. Like that isn't that, what that thought never even went through my head. There, it was some other thought, right? Like I that thought never crosses my mind when I'm in those moments, which is really good, right? Like that means something's working for me,
yeah.
At this point. So that part's done. I do like to have like one little fun part of these shows. Not that that wasn't fun, because it is fun to hear people's stories. But I do like to hear what, I'm a big fan of TV, movies, music. And I just love to hear what other people like to take in. Is there anything that you take in that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah. Recently, I just rewatched the series on Netflix. It's called The OA. And it came out about the same time, I want to say, Stranger Things did. So like, it was really popular and all the rage. This was kind of, I haven't heard that much about it, but I just rewatched it, and it's basically, it really gave me this sense of understanding what has helped me my sobriety, which is that we're all one. We're all connected, and being present in the moment where you're at is really what's important. It kind of, yeah, it was just something you'd have, it's too hard to explain, but it, when I was watching the series, it's only two seasons, and when I was watching it, I was like, that's right. The older I get, the more time that passes, it's just, when people hear the God, they just think, I don't know. I think of, what do you think of? Big Daddy up in the sky or something. I don't know. But no, God is love. It's in all of us. I have found God in you, Corey, during this conversation. Us speaking and hearing each other's hearts, that is God. That is love. And it's what connects. That's what it's all about. And it kind of sounds like a simple thought, but not really, because if you're not thinking about it, if you're not living it, you'll get distracted by all the things.
Yes.
All the things that don't matter. So yeah, I guess that would be my recommendation for a good show on Netflix, The OA.
I'll put that one on my list. I've seen it, and I have not watched it, but I will put that one on my list. For me this week, this is easier, because normally it got pretty hard. I was doing these like every week for a little while, and it was hard to like come up with something every week. But I've had a bit of a lapse, so I started watching Bates Motel. Which is, I guess, like a show about the movie Psycho is what, right? I guess it is, right? Mm-hmm. So like, and it's kind of like a teenage, kind of like WB-ish version of it, but a little bit more intense, because I don't think it was on the WB, but it feels like a WB show. Pretty good so far. Decent acting. There's the kid that's in the the other show, The Good Doctor, which is a yeah, he's in it. So he's a really good actor. And so far so good. I'm on season two. I think there's five seasons. So we'll see how it goes.
Thank you for that recommendation. Yeah.
And then I will say it, and I've said it a lot on here, but we started the third season of The Bear. And we are going slow. We are slow walking it. We are two episodes in, and we're going to like take it nice and easy because...
Don't binge it.
Yeah, like there's only so many left, and they're, every single one is like such a great bit of film.
I keep hearing that recommendation, and I, being someone who's in the industry, I get it. I want to watch it. I've seen clips of it, and I'll have to check that out
too. Yeah, yeah. So maybe I'll watch one tonight. I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, Heidi, I wanted to thank you for being on and sharing your story. I know that not everybody enjoys doing that, but I do really think there's value in people hearing it, right? Because podcasts for me were also a place where I could go, like, after AA, like, I stopped getting something from AA. I went to podcasts. So that's why I do this now. And there's a bunch of them, and people hear stories, and it just, it's another tool, right? Maybe somebody that can't drive and they don't like virtual meetings. Well, there's podcasts. So,
yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you for inviting me and having this platform to do so. Yeah, that's like I mentioned earlier, it's us connecting, two people connecting, or someone sitting listening to this. If there's one thing someone said that, you know, helps them or inspires them, that's what it's about.
That is what it's about.
Knows it, people have done that for me.
Yeah.
Continue to. So, yeah.
Well, we'll leave on that. And everybody, if you can like, review, subscribe, do all those things, it does help. And we will be here with another episode soon.
Thank you so much, Corey.
Thank you, Heidi.